Okay, folks, so this chapter one of Quinn Slobodian's book, Hayek's Bastards. We've already read the introduction to this book, and so we're just going to read one more chapter from it, and it's called, what is it called? Of Savannas and Satellites. And so it begins with the story of the Hotel Majestic in Cannes, which is on the French Riviera in 1994. So I looked up this hotel. One really interesting thing about all of these kind of movements, right? These alt-right movements or the financial conservative neoliberal movement or Austrian economics or the Mont Pelerin Society is that they all meet at hotels, right? They meet at these gorgeous hotels in gorgeous places and they decide the future or they try to decide how they're intending to shape the future. So this was the wake of the Mont Pelerin Society, MPS's founder, Friedrich Hayek, who was, had been he's the namesake of Quinn Slobodian's book. He's one of the theorists who had been promoting a neoliberal economics since the 1930s, had his famous book, The Road to Serfdom, is on the tongues and on the desks of everyone's from Steve Bannon across to J.D. Vance and everybody else. So anyway, this is neoliberal economic conservatism, and it is, it is fleshed out a little bit in this chapter in terms of the way this think tank, the Mont Pelerin Society, that continues to operate and has done so since the 1940s, promotes and rationalizes its ideas. And so what this chapter does is it kind of spells out the workings and the stories, the intellectual kind of narratives that propel the Mont Pelerin Society and the perpetuation of neoliberal economics through to this day, and why its effects in 2025 with the Trump administration and other kind of new right governments makes sense in the terms of neoliberal economics, and not just in terms of cultural conservatism or something else. So one of the suggestions at this wake for Friedrich Hayek was, and also for this kind of planning meeting for the future of the Mont Pelerin Society, was that it need to diversify from economics and actually broaden into biology, evolutionary biology, etc. And the reason for that is that evolution became one of the kind of primary discourses that these economists, or these, I'll call them institutional designers as well, picked up on as crucial for their theories of future society and for the perpetuation of capitalism under neoliberal economics. And so, Hayek had also branched out throughout the 1950s to the 1980s into other disciplines like biology, evolutionary biology, cybernetics, etc. And one of the key hypotheses that he advanced was that what happens, evolution happens in what is called a Lamarckian vein rather than merely an individual vein, which is that certain groups evolve to embody competencies, technical, social competencies over time, and those are kind of stored in the collective unconscious. So it's not that those competencies are stored in genes so much as they're shared among certain groups of people who evolve differently than others. And in this, of course, you're starting to hear racial overtones. Some of Hayek's biggest speeches about this were given in apartheid South Africa, for example, in the 1980s. And so what we see is a justification through evolution of a view of global differences or social differences that say, well, it's not that people are naturally unequal so much as that evolution dictates that certain groups acquire certain capacities and characteristics and competencies and others do not. So this is a version of social Darwinism in which it is actually groups of people, ethnicities, for example, classes of people that cultivate or do not cultivate competencies over time and then pass those things on to the next generation of their ethnicity or their race or their class. And so this is why Friedrich Hayek thought that social justice was a mirage. You can't simply go out there and declare that everyone is equal because that flies in the face of evolutionary fact. Right. So he was convinced that habits and actions among social actors or human beings happen regardless of human intention. So for example, the evolutionary capacities or skills of a certain group are passed on no matter whether states intervene or individual teachers intervene and instruct them. They are reliably passed on from generation to generation. So this is a certain kind of backing off of the belief that states and governments and institutions can help everyone to achieve equal or equitable levels of education or of competence or of productivity, and rather that is achieved through competition in this extended order of the global economy. And so he was interested in how groups small groups offer this capacity for people to achieve the highest level of output or productivity in the pursuit of global trade, rather than and it was a vision of competitive selection among cultural institutions, and it had an image of collectivity that was not actually the kind of communist version, but was rather a competitive version. So you might think of a family in which the family has cohesion, but it does not have a community. So what happens is if a small group of people stick together, it increases their competitiveness rather than their mutual compassion or their community spirit. They're not supposed to share. They're supposed to kind of compete with people. So that is a very, very different image of group solidarity than is proposed by, for example, socialist societies. And so what we see in Friedrich Hayek is this kind of idealization of the small group that competes internally. And so he pictured a small group without the group feeling that might move in the direction of sharing, a society absent of demands for social justice, a troop with no impulse towards redistribution, communal cohesion without a sense of community. And so this is what he sees as kind of baked into evolution. And if we strive against that, if we say that we want to engineer a society in which every part of society helps every other part of society, or that we lift up each other by sharing or redistributing, we are going against basic facts of evolution. And so this is, of course, diametrically opposed not only to socialism and communism, but to various forms of New Deal liberalism in the United States that sought to, a rising tide lifts all ships, for example. So this is the vision that Friedrich Hayek kind of proposed into the 1980s and 1990s of neoliberal economics, is that what we want to do is we want to create small groups of producers who, in being able to compete with each other internally, increase output and increase productivity wherever they are, and therefore they generate more more productivity globally, and that is the goal of neoliberal economics. So all of this is inspired by certain views of the African savanna, which is the kind of the savanna story is where Hayek and others kind of garner their confidence in a certain vision of evolutionary truth. That, you know, if you go back to the savanna where early humans figured out how to organize themselves, what you will find is what is essentially the most optimal version of human self-organization, which is not the state, nor is it the sharing community, but rather the kind of cell of small producers, which Hayek calls the troop, that will, organize economic activity in the most optimal way. And so most of his economic theory was, especially in the 1960s and 70s, was designed around that ideal. So he suggested, we are and must remain human animals, and we neglected this fact at our peril. And so the vision of a productive global economy for him was to keep close to that kind of troop level organization in the African savanna of early human self-organization, but to make sure to reduce the propensity for war between all of those small groups. You know, and he called this designing satellites that would glide between these two poles, between the sharing community and the warring individual groups, and so that we could both observe the hard facts of human nature as he saw them and his followers saw them, and the need for constant economic exchange to ensure global productivity. So this is his kind of economic vision that we see being proposed through the Mont Pelerin Society and neoliberal economics. And you will perhaps notice this in your own environment, the way lots of different institutions, including educational institutions, will propose to you that you form teams, and that the teams will kind of, in a competitive spirit, engender into you the desire and then the ability to produce outcomes, and that it is that small troop of humans self-organizing into teams that creates the kind of productivity that neoliberal economics wants to see more of. And so you see more of that kind of team building type of ideology in classes, educational institutions, etc., rather than a focus on the individual or the collective, but these smaller troops. That is the vision that we get from Quinn Slobodian recounting the development of Hayek's theories in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And of course, this is a different realm of the alt-right or the new right than is paleoconservatism like Pat Buchanan or others who we will explore in coming weeks. But it is important to note the really profound, powerful role that thinkers like the Austrian economist Friedrich Hayek and his descendants in the Mont Pelerin Society continue to influence in current kind of political waves and debates and discourses, both in the United States and in France and in Germany and in Argentina and in Canada and elsewhere. So keep an eye on all those features, and I hope you enjoyed this week's reading.